Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You've heard it. I know you've heard it and you've read it recently that while the prospect of overturning Roe v. Wade looms with a presidential pick of an originalist to sit in Anthony Kennedy's seat on the Supreme Court, maybe Roe will be history soon. I know that you've heard along with that the objection that that can't be because so many Americans, the latest figure I read just this morning, 75% of Americans support Roe v. Wade. Is that true? If you oppose Roe v. Wade, are you really in that small of a minority in the United States? There has to be more to the story. Joining us to sort that out on this Tuesday afternoon, answering the question, do Americans really support Roe v. Wade, Dr. Charles Camosi. He's Associate Professor of Theological and Social Ethics at Fordham University. He's author of the book Beyond the Abortion Wars and a recent column for The Federalist titled Seven Reasons It is Deeply Misleading to Claim Americans Support Roe v. Wade. Dr. Camosi, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Just this morning, I read for probably the 100th time at some mainstream media outlet that 75% of Americans support Roe v. Wade. 75% of Americans support abortion on demand. Why do I keep reading that particular figure?
Well, because the people who are giving that to you really don't understand what they're reporting. So I suppose it could be a good faith ignorance or it could be political manipulation. The basic point is this. Roe versus Wade has brought in to the United States one of the most extreme abortion regimes in the entire world. Depending who you talk to, it's either abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy or abortion on demand through viability, which is 24 weeks. Either one you pick, we're among the most extreme in the entire world. And Americans overwhelmingly want abortion restricted to 12 weeks and below. And that's where the American people are. So when someone says we support Roe versus Wade or the people support Roe versus Wade, they either don't know what they're talking about or they're trying to make a politically manipulative point.
One of the points that you make in your Federalist piece is that Roe is really no longer Roe. What is it, legally, Supreme Court speaking?
Well, it's a series of further cases that expanded on Roe and in some ways chopped Roe. The main one is called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was in 1992. And in 1992, the court moved completely away from a privacy argument about abortion to what's called an undue burden view about abortion. And what was said during that time was, hey, guess what? We think there are good reasons to restrict abortion, but they can't have an undue burden on women. They have to be not burdensome on women. And so certain things passed, like the partial birth abortion ban passed and wait times for abortions passed and other things have passed. Not major legislation, but nibbling around the edges. So it's even a mistake to ask, is Roe overturned? Is Roe in some ways already has been overturned? It's been replaced by Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
What do, as far as we can tell, what do Americans know about Roe v. Wade?
Very little. A good percentage of Americans don't even know what the decision is about. And I think it's over 50% of people under 30 don't even know that Roe versus Wade is actually about abortion, which is just, for me, a shocking number. But even if you do know, one does know it's about abortion, what the details are of the case are often sketchy. And a lot of people think that if Roe is overturned, it'll make abortion illegal or something. As a resident of New Jersey and somebody that works in New York, I know that's not true because all it will do is let New Jersey and New York law stand, which will make abortion very permissive. So it'll go back to the states. We'll actually have a legislative process take place. There will be good faith debate, not handed down by unelected judges. All men, by the way, gave us Roe, important to point out. Let's have women's voices of all shapes and sizes and political opinions and religions be heard. And let's do this. And we haven't been able to do it for over 40 years, many decades. And that's the way an issue like abortion should be decided, by argument and evidence.
You also point out that even proponents of abortion, even proponents of what Roe has gotten us here, don't think much of Roe v. Wade, the actual decision. Why is that?
Yeah, well, there's at least two camps of pro-abortion rights people who don't like Roe. One camp is a feminist camp who says, well, the people who made Roe, again, were all men, middle-aged white men who really didn't have women's rights at the heart of what they were up to. They often had, in fact, protecting doctors from litigation as their primary concern. But another more interesting, and I think sympathetic, I have sympathy for the position, is one offered by, I believe my Federalist piece, I quoted Peter Singer saying, the best way to do this is a legislative process, as I said earlier. He thinks that the one reason why abortion has remained such a contentious issue in the United States and not in places like his native Australia and Europe, for instance, is because it was, again, handed down by unelected judges. The people never felt like they got a chance to actually have their voices heard and to make arguments, try to convince us, to convince their fellow citizens. And he thinks wrongly, I believe, that that would come out on, you know, pro-abortion rights side. I think at the very least, if a legislative process takes place, we're going to have a much more restrictive policy than we have right now. And it's interesting, in places like Europe, they have thresholds in the early second trimester. Most are in the 12 to 14 week range. We can't even get a 20 week ban passed in the United States. We have one of the most extreme regimes in the world, and Roe is what's given us that regime.
Does that, in your opinion, kind of give us a possible picture of the future of the United States minus Roe v. Wade or Planned Parenthood versus Casey? Looking more like these countries where through the legislative process, abortion is permitted but severely restricted.
I think that's right. And I think it'll look different state to state. And in some ways, though I wish New York and New Jersey would restrict abortion very dramatically, that's kind of what a democracy is about, right? It's about the local citizens engaging with each other, trying to convince each other, using arguments and evidence again to offer their point of view and to have the best arguments and evidence win the day. Now, people with different points of view about whether the fetus is a person, at what stage a fetus is a person. I have my views on that. It's at conception. But other people have different views. Others weigh exceptions, like the sexual violence exception, differently. These are all things that will come out in the wash locally in different states. And so it will almost be like where you have the United Kingdom pretty, you know, I think they're at 20-some weeks in their threshold. But interestingly, the Netherlands is like 13 weeks. France is pretty down there. So, Louisiana will not be the same as New York, and New Jersey will not be the same as Arizona. But that, again, mirrors a lot of, as your question implied, what's going on in Europe.
You also point out that Americans are largely, when asked, and that's part of the problem here, is they aren't always asked, they are supportive of restriction on abortion, the very kind of restrictions that Roe would ban.
It's amazing. That's what I find is so disingenuous, either ignorant or disingenuous about citing the just raw poll numbers of Roe. What's important in our current situation, having, you know, Kavanaugh just been nominated in this coming debate, is what do American people think about abortion? Not what they mistakenly think about Roe. So let's ask what American people think about abortion. And when you ask, Americans, I think, disappointingly, are very supportive of abortion in the first trimester. They're not at all supportive of it in the second trimester and beyond. But again, our current regime, our abortion regime, Roe Casey regime, permits it without exception until viability, which is 24 weeks. So let's, one thing we just have to hold the media's feet to the fire and all public discourse on this is to say, stop simplistically talking about Roe. Let's ask questions. What about 20 weeks? What about 12 weeks? What about Down syndrome? What about sex selection? What about when men force women into abortion? Should they be penalized? These kinds of things are common sense legislation that we currently can't get done because of one of the most extreme abortion regimes in the world.
We've been hearing it a lot over the last 2 weeks. The common kind of scaremongering that is taking place is that if Roe is overturned, we return to this era that somehow people who were born in, I don't know, 1980 somehow remember these days. I don't know how they do that. But this era of the dark back alley, the crooked abortionist who may not even have a medical degree. Often we'll talk about the image of the coat hanger is invoked as well. Did that era exist? What did it look like before Roe? And what about all that scaremongering?
You could make an argument that before the development of modern medicine in the United States, and perhaps in countries that don't have modern medicine, that's a legitimate concern. I think that's something that we actually need to wrestle with as a pro-life movement. What do we do when, and especially in a developing country, making abortion illegal tends to make it dangerous and not all that less frequent? That's not the case of the United States. So in the Federalist article you mentioned, I linked to a study done in 1960, done by a Journal of Sociology and Public Health, which found that illegal abortions were just as safe as legal abortions. Why? Because they were being done by licensed physicians and licensed clinics. And there was good medicine being used. So women were not dying of illegal abortions at any rate higher than legal abortions. So it's really just scaremongering, as your question said. And I'd further note that Bernard Nathanson, who is one of the co-founders of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights and Action League, who, as you may know, had a big conversion in his life and became pro-life after being an abortionist that even performed an abortion on his own child, flat out admitted that they just fabricated those numbers, that they have no idea what the numbers were, but it was politically accepted in their circles and was, you know, what more powerful image could you have than a coat hanger for kind of like trying to drive home the point? So if it's, you know, if it's political theater that you're interested in, that works very well. If it's actual facts, it's not true.
Why do you think those myths about pre-Roe persist, have such staying power, despite the fact that, as you pointed out, some of the guys who made up the story admit they made up the story?
I think it's just a winning argument. It's not really an argument. It's a winning image. Who is going to be for anything that could even come remotely close to coat hanger abortions, right? If all that pro-lifers are in favor is driving women to back alleys, desperate women into back alleys, then of course we shouldn't make abortion illegal. I mean, that's just horrific. That's if we're not going to save any babies' lives and we're going to put women in these dangerous circumstances, then of course not. But again, people don't even know what Roe versus Wade even is, much less the social science data from before Roe versus Wade and public health data before Roe versus Wade came along. So people just don't know. And they see respected people on MSNBC and CBS morning shows talking about coat hanger abortions, then that and not what they don't know about social science and public health data from the 60s is going to win the day. But that's all the more reason to push back and say, we want to support women. We want health outcomes for women to be better. In fact, in developed countries like Ireland, though they recently turned their back on their wonderful abortion policy, and Chile have seen better health outcomes for women as they've restricted abortion. So we don't need to take a back seat on this. We need to be aggressive and say, hey, we support just as much as you healthy, flourishing women, and actually our proposals are going to produce that more than your proposals will.
We're talking about whether or not Americans support Roe v. Wade. Dr. Charles Camosi is our guest. When we come back, what do we know about how Americans think about so-called exceptional cases? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
You can call it what you like. I call it life. I call it life. I prayed for things nobody.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Lutherans for Life is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During July, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Lutherans for life. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues, Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues, Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Issues, Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues, Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues, Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're answering the question, do Americans really support Roe v. Wade? Dr. Charles C. Camosi is our guest. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's life ministry is devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and in the culture at large. Check out their free pro-life resource at lcms.org/life, advocating for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable, LCMS Life Ministry, lcms.org/life. Dr. Camosi, we had mentioned just a few moments ago some of those exceptional cases, but let's go a little bit deeper. What do we know about what Americans think about the so-called exceptional cases when it comes to abortion and Roe?
Well, this is, aside from the back alley abortions, this is what I don't know about you and your listeners, but this is, as a pro-lifer, this is what I hear more than anything, is what about exceptions, especially for rape and incest? That's what I get a lot. And there's, as you probably know, a good faith argument within the pro-life movement about what to do with those exceptions. I think, at least as a short-term goal, we absolutely have to have the exceptions in, because if we end up arguing that women who are victims of sexual violence have to bring their pregnancies to term, it's almost impossible for people we need to convince to hear anything else we have to say. That's just going to be what's pounded into their brains again and again by our adversaries. So I think we need to be careful about how to handle this. So we need to not discriminate on the basis of any reason, like fetuses who are babies who come about as a result of sexual violence are not different in kind from babies that aren't, that come a different way. But I do think we need to be realistic and say, anytime we allow our opponents to focus on this tiny exception, which is 1% at most of all abortions, they're winning the debate. And we're not focusing on the fact that, for instance, 70 to 90% of babies with Down syndrome are killed via abortion simply because parents don't want a child that's disabled. So when we're talking about the actual reasons people have abortions in the main, we win. The American people are with us. When we start talking about the exceptional cases and trying to defend those, we have a more difficult time, it seems to me.
What about kind of the caveat that hard cases, and here we are talking about genuinely hard cases do make bad law. We shouldn't be writing laws primarily with the hard case in mind.
I agree. I wish we would spend more, again, this gets to control the narrative and who gets to talk, but you know, if we're actually talking again about who has abortions, why they have abortions, we'd be spending a lot more time on poverty, on intimate partner violence. There's an amazing correlation between intimate partner violence and abortion that very few people talk about. We'd be talking about paid family leave. We'd be talking about help with hopelessly expensive childcare. We wouldn't be talking about rape and sexual violence as much as we do. But again, because pro-lifers generally don't have control of the narrative, our opponents want to go there again and again and say, oh, you're for forcing victims of rape to give birth to the rapist child. And as long as we keep focused on that, we're not doing what we could be doing in the broader debate.
You had mentioned Down syndrome and disabled children. What do Americans think about abortion as this quote-unquote solution for that problem?
You know, sometimes it's Goodwin's law where you say he who invokes Nazi loses, Nazi Germany loses the argument first. But my gosh, that's even using the word solution just has to invoke Nazi Germany there, right? The Nazis started out with their horrific practices by involuntarily killing the disabled in their own interest. And this is what we're doing with people with Down syndrome via abortion. In fact, even worse, because you might say, well, they have a burdensome life or something, but that's just not true. People with Down syndrome actually report being happier than those of us without Down syndrome. So we're killing at a rate of 70 to 90% in utero, and Americans loathe this. I think the statistics I cited were pro-lifers are in the 80s against it, and even people who identify as pro-choice are over 50% or about 50% against it as well. And then most people, you know, are somewhere in between. So, I mean, to get 70% of the American people to agree about anything is overwhelming consensus. And we are overwhelmingly against this practice. And so, again, if we could focus on and work with disability rights groups and work with people, you know, maybe strange bedfellows to say, hey, we may disagree about, you know, abortion at week 10, but can we agree that, you know, 80% of babies killed in utero because they have a disability is horrific and we ought to do something about it?
Let's talk about a way forward here. And I'm just curious about how you would script this if you could. It seems to me that simply overturning Roe v. Wade without first educating the American people about what's being changed. You don't change something unless you understand what it is you're changing. And as much as I want to see Roe v. Wade overturned, it seems to me that if we do not raise the level of understanding in American society about what Roe is, what it isn't, where do we stand, as you say, most extreme regime in the world when it comes to abortion. If we don't raise the level of understanding generally, overturning Roe v. Wade might have a lot of unintended consequences.
That's a nuanced and careful and important point, and I'm sympathetic. I do think we'll be waiting a long time, though, pro-lifers, if we're going to wait until we get control of the public narrative and public discourse over this to even allow it to happen. I think many of the talking heads and people who control the discourse, frankly, aren't interested. In fact, they are interested in keeping people uneducated about what Roe is because they have this general sense that, you know, if Roe is overturned, women are dying in back alleys or something instead of actually looking at what would happen. I mean, but in principle, I agree. We ought to be doing everything we can to educating, to sticking our neck out and being heard, not letting people get away with lazily just citing one poll question about Roe. But at the same time, I'm wondering if we actually will have the kind of reach necessary to do that kind of education, especially when the gatekeepers of public discourse, almost all of them, have a decided political interest in keeping people ignorant.
So finally, in the plainest possible terms, what happens if Roe v. Wade is actually overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in 3 years or 5 years?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I follow the law on this pretty closely and talk to my friends who are lawyers. And I think there are two ways it could go. One would be a kind of chipping away using the undue burden standard of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, just to have a growing sense of what would be, or maybe a shrinking sense of what kind of abortion regime would be an undue burden. So would a 20-week ban be an undue burden? Would making Down syndrome abortions legal be an undue burden? So you could kind of kill Roe and Casey with 1,000 cuts by saying those are constitutional, but never formally changing the law. And that would be kind of just not much would change except these state laws would generally just keep going and we'd keep having them from time to time. A more dramatic situation would happen where a law was changed at its fundamental level, where Roe Casey was changed, the right to abortion was changed at a fundamental level. I'm less sanguine on that actually happening, But if it did, again, all it would do, unless there would be a sort of crazy thing happen where at least five justices would have to say that the Constitution gives the unborn child a right to life, which maybe that would happen. I don't think it would happen. It doesn't seem to be there in the Constitution. But almost certainly what would happen is the current state laws would kick in again. And many states have their own laws on the books, and those that didn't would want them changed would have a legislative debate for the first time that really mattered since Roe was promulgated. And that would be all to the good for many reasons.
So in your opinion, what do you think is the biggest misconception? We could even say in some cases the biggest lie that people believe about Roe v. Wade.
Well, we haven't talked about it yet, but I would say that it's good for women. I identify as a pro-life feminist. It's no accident that, again, it was seven unelected white men that promulgated this law. We've not seen rates of happiness and flourishing for women improve since abortion on demand came into existence. In fact, quite the contrary, we've seen them go down. Many women feel as if they have to stay unpregnant in order to flourish in this world. We struggle to pass things like paid family leave and help with childcare because we expect women, even in desperate circumstances, to stay unpregnant and compete on the same level as men who obviously can't get pregnant, at least for now. So, you know, that's the thing that we've already talked about things that are misconceptions, but maybe one to drive home at the end here is that let's challenge as pro-lifers this idea that abortion on demand has been good for women and actually look at the data in a more careful way to show that pro-life laws are actually better for women.
Dr. Charles C. Camosi is Associate Professor of Theological and Social Ethics at Fordham University, author of the book Beyond the Abortion Wars and a recent column for The Federalist titled Seven Reasons It is Deeply Misleading to Claim American Support Roe v. Wade. You can read it and purchase Beyond the Abortion Wars at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Camosi, thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to conclude our long series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism, talking with Pastor Jonathan Fisk about teaching our children forgiveness. Now, that's the most important thing we could ever teach our children. We'll also find out from Helen Raleigh about how marrying instead of cohabiting can improve couples' net worth. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.